Welcome to It's All About Food. I'm your host, Karen Hartglass. Thanks for joining me. It's been an interesting, lovely holiday period. I've missed being here, talking to you for a couple of weeks, and it's good to be back. Back talking about one of my favorite subjects, food. And we've got some really good, yummy food topics to talk about today. So I'm really looking forward to that. I know we've talked about this before the holidays. Now I'm going to talk about it after the holidays. But the holidays are an interesting time. It's lovely and festive and very food-focused. And a lot of people tend to put on some unwanted pounds during that time period. And so now is the time to try and get those pounds off. And I'm always out there ready to encourage people to eat more plant foods. They're satisfying. They're delicious. And they help you maintain your weight or lose those unnecessary pounds in a really easy way. And unfortunately, perhaps you've noticed, there are some companies and food establishments that know you're trying to lose weight during this period, and so they send out all kinds of enticing coupons, like McDonald's, for example, to get you out to eat those nasty, high-calorie, saturated, fat-laden foods for a very low price. And it's very tempting and very difficult to stay on the path to eat healthy. But we're here to help. And one of the things that's really difficult are those very tempting, gooey, sweet desserts. And I've got something great for you today. We're going to be talking with Jennifer Kornbleach. She has a great new book out called Raw for Dessert. You're going to love what we're talking about today. She's a nationally recognized raw food chef and instructor, a best-selling author, and sought-after speaker dedicated to making the world of raw food an easy and accessible addition to the 21st century kitchens. And she has another book called Raw Food Made Easy for One or Two People, which focuses on providing maximum flavor with minimum effort. And now this new book, Raw for Dessert, which offers ideas for dozens of delicious favorites, including cookies, cakes, pies, candies. And the recipes are made without dairy, without sugar, without flour, without gluten or any processed ingredients of any kind. Sounds too good to be true. Jennifer, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi, thanks for joining me today. And I don't think I've ever met you, but I've been to your website and I feel like I know you. I certainly like what you're doing. And your food looks really good. So you have this new book out, Raw for Dessert. And as I was saying, a lot of people struggle with weight, especially when it comes to snacks and desserts and things. And you put out this book with great tasting and great looking desserts that with foods that are good for you.
Yes. Well, I have always had a sweet tooth, and so I've always struggled with eating too many conventional desserts, but not wanting to eat a lot of those ingredients that are in conventional desserts, like you were mentioning, the saturated fat, the butter, the cream, the eggs, the sugar, and all of that. So I wanted to come up with a book of recipes that tasted just as good as those traditional counterparts, but without a lot of those ingredients that people are trying to avoid.
And you've done it.
Yes, it can be done.
And so the trick is, of course, we want to get this information out to people and help them make these great recipes in their home because they're beautiful and they're satisfying and they're good for you. I was just on your website, learnrawfood.com, and you have some great videos up there. One of them is making a chocolate mousse. Can you talk about the ingredients in that? Because I think they'd be surprising to people.
Sure. The chocolate mousse recipe is actually one of the recipes in my first book, Raw Food Made Easy, for one or two people. And the secret ingredient is avocado. And it might seem really strange to use avocado in a dessert, but if you think about it, butter, cream, and eggs don't really have much flavor. They just take on other flavors and make things rich and creamy. And that's exactly what the avocado does in the chocolate mousse. You don't even know it's there. It tastes just like it's got butter and cream in it. It's just a rich, creamy chocolate mousse.
And, you know, I know most people don't think about what's in their food, and that's part of the challenge. we should know what's in our food, and we should know where that food comes from. And so people just put things in their mouth and go, oh, that's good, that's not good, whatever. And then you might offer up this mousse, and people would go, wow, that's good, and never realize what's in it.
Absolutely. Yeah, that happens all the time. I'll have people taste a dessert, and they're just like, wow, that tastes so good. And then later they might ask what's in that, and they just can't believe it.
And so I encourage people, read the labels, find out what's in your food, but then also you can experiment with these things, and I really welcome you to try some of these recipes because they're really good. And just like you said, if you think about it from maybe, this kind of takes the sexiness away from food, but if you think about it from a chemistry point of view, you know, what actually is butter and cream? It's fat. And if you substitute another fat, a healthier fat, you can trick yourself. And it's not even a trick, but you can make it.
Absolutely. You know, in raw for dessert, I don't get rid of fat and sugar because that's what makes food taste good, especially desserts. But what we do is change the kind of fat and sugar. So instead of those saturated fats or the trans fats, you're going to have monounsaturated fats and omega-3s and walnuts. And instead of white sugar, you're going to have fresh fruit or dried fruit or other natural sweeteners.
You know, I was just reading an article in the New Yorker about some very famous dessert chefs, and forgive me for not remembering. I read so fast, Ryan. I get so much reading in. but they were talking about when they train their chefs, they do a lot of it blindfolded so that the chefs develop a feeling and the smell of foods, because there's so much of those things that are important in what we eat that most of us don't think about again. And I wonder if those folks would be able to identify the differences. And certainly if you ate an avocado plain, you could tell it diff. But if you gave them a chocolate mousse made with avocado versus a cream.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. That might be, I don't know, a fun thing to organize sometime. Can you guess what's in here? And then the other part of that mousse is that you use it with a nut crust.
Yeah, the video on the site is a chocolate mousse tart. So you've got the chocolate mousse filling, which you can also have by itself. And then the crust, what's great about a raw pie crust, in addition to it being healthier, is there's no rolling out the dough or baking or anything like that. They're much, much simpler. It's just a matter of putting the ingredients in a food processor and pulsing it for a couple seconds, and you've got your crumbs, and you just press them into the pan. So it's very easy, and there's no baking or anything. And so the crust ingredients, there's no white flour or butter, which is what you usually have in a pie crust. Instead, you're using walnuts, dates, and a little bit of dried coconut. And when you combine those ingredients in the right proportion and process them together, they don't really taste like walnuts, dates, or dried coconut. They kind of combine their flavors to just have a taste and a texture that's very similar to a traditional pastry crust.
It's really amazing. I've been making something similar made with fruits, a blueberry-based tart in a dried fruit nut crust. And I really love it. It's especially good in the summer because it's light and fresh. But I have not made this chocolate mousse, and I really can't wait to do it because it looks so good. The other thing is more and more people now are having allergies to wheat and gluten.
Mm-hmm.
And when people discover this, it's really scary, frustrating, disappointing, because so many of the foods we eat today have wheat in them.
Right. And that's another advantage of a raw dessert, is that it's already going to be gluten-free. So you don't have to wonder, you know, is it gluten-free, is it dairy-free, all these things people are trying to avoid because of allergies or just other reasons. It's already not in the desserts. So that's really great.
Okay, so it's easy, and it doesn't have some ingredients in it that may cause some difficulty, and good for you. So I follow
and delicious.
Hey, I follow a vegan diet, and for 2 years I was completely raw. I'm not now. But one thing I learned from that experience was that I used to have headaches that would come and last for about 48 hours, and I couldn't quite attribute what they were from. And then when I was on the raw food diet, I never had any headaches. And then just recently, I started to experience these same kind of headaches again, and I realized I was eating more wheat than I used to. And so I haven't been eating wheat, and I haven't had the headache. So I really think I have some issues with wheat. And that's where these desserts are so wonderful, because I've always loved making desserts. And when I have people over for dinner, I always tend to kind of go overboard with the desserts and have two or three available. So it's great when you can make them with healthy foods and not feel bad about it.
Definitely.
Okay. And then the other video that you have up there that I love, love, love. I mean, you make all my favorite foods. So the other one is the kale salad. And I'm a big fanatic about dark leafy green vegetables, how important they are. And your video is great because when you want to eat kale raw, it's a little difficult because it's tough. You gave some great tips in that video.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times people think they can't eat a dark leafy green that's tougher, like kale or collards or whatever, unless they cook them. But these greens are so nutritious, and there's no need to cook them to make them really palatable and delicious. And one thing you can do, of course, is blend them into smoothies or drinks. But what you can also do if you want to eat them as a salad is if you cut the kale really fine into ribbons, you take off the stem because that's a little tougher, and then cut it really fine into ribbons. That helps break down the fiber. And then the secret is, instead of just gently tossing the kale in a dressing the way you might toss a green leafy salad because you don't want it to wilt, you want the kale to wilt. Just like if you steamed or stir-fried it, you want to break down that fiber. So you get in there and you massage the kale just for a couple minutes really vigorously with your hands, massage in the dressing, and it wilts it just like you steamed or stir-fried it. And so you preserve all the color and the flavor and the nutrition, and it's even quicker than steaming.
This is really an amazing tip, and it's something I have to say I have never done, and I am going to start doing. Usually what I do is put something acidic, like a vinegar or a citrus juice, and just leave it on the chopped kale for a while and wait for it to get a little softer. But the massaging sounds really great, and I would think that it might be a good way to get kids interested in eating these foods too, when they can get their hands into it and mash it around a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I still put a little lemon and a pinch of salt and a little olive oil on it. But with the massaging, you don't even have to wait for it to marinate. It's just a 1 minute thing. So, you know, you don't have to steam or fry your vegetables. You can just massage them, and they're really, really delicious.
Brilliant. So how did you get on this path of healthy foods, particularly raw food?
Well, I've always loved food. I've always really enjoyed delicious food and learned to cook at an early age, became a vegetarian at an early age. And so I had an interest in different foods, and, you know, different plant-based foods were always interesting to me. And then later on when I was in college, I met a yoga instructor who introduced me to raw foods, and he suggested that I include more raw foods in my diet. You know, just include more salads and juices and smoothies, and try to get more fruits and vegetables raw, especially vegetables raw, in my diet. So I decided to give it a try, not really knowing what to expect, but just kind of intrigued by it. And after a month of doing that, and just also I want to mention I'm not strict. I don't eat 100% raw diet. I like to be flexible, and I don't think it's necessary to eat an all-raw diet to experience a lot of health benefits. So I'm just trying to include more raw in my diet and kind of expand ways I have of getting healthy foods, particularly the plant-based foods in my diet. And so when I did that for a month, just really increased the amount of raw plant foods, I noticed my energy and my health really improve. I lost some weight. Digestive problems went away. My skin cleared up. I was sleeping better. I had more energy. So I could really see the connection between what I eat and how I feel, like very directly there. So after that experience, I just decided, well, I want to include more raw foods in my diet. And I also found it really creative because I do love to cook. And so the opportunity to develop all these new recipes that are kind of different and unique was just really a creative process for me too.
People certainly don't eat enough raw food in the diet, and There's a lot of reasons behind that. I think one of the reasons we live in this consumer-based society now, and people are always looking for ways to make money, and one way to do that is to package a food and sell it. And so we've got on this intense way of eating lots of packaged convenience foods. And there's even, especially where I am in New York, a lot of the health food stores now sell a lot of packaged, quote, raw food treats. And I'm kind of suspect about some of them just because they're not as fresh as they can be and they're dehydrated and they might be better than cooked or highly processed packaged foods. But there's nothing like getting fresh produce as fresh as you can get it also, which is another issue, and making it right away and eating it. And and as you show and in your book, it's really not hard. It's not time-consuming. I love how you show in your video where you're making zucchini pasta that it takes less time to make the strands of zucchini than it does to boil the pasta in the water.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I'm really focused on easy things because I know people are busy. You know, even if you enjoy gourmet cooking, everyone gets busy from time to time, and most people need it to be really quick and easy yet tasty. So that is really my focus, is to make it just as quick, easy, and simple as possible. None of my recipes are dehydrated, for example. You don't need fancy equipment or exotic ingredients. So I just really want people to know that it can actually be easier time-wise to eat a healthful diet, you know, and quicker than things like eating out all the time or, you know, it's pretty simple. It can be very simple.
Now, what about in the winter? I'm in New York, for example. It's pretty cold here. And is it okay or is it satisfying to eat raw food when things are not really hot?
Yeah, well, what about winter? Well, as I mentioned, I don't eat 100% raw diet, so I just want to make that clear. If you were eating only raw foods, it can be done. People do it, but that might be more of a challenge for, like, your average person, and I don't do that. But in terms of including more raw in your diet in the winter, I don't find I have any problem with, like, a smoothie or a shake in the morning. It's very light, very tasty. You put some dark greens in it, and you use fruits that are in season, so maybe like a little bit of apple or something. You're not going to, or you could use frozen berries. You're not going to use like peaches or things, you know, fresh ingredients that you can only get in the summer. So you put some more greens in there and use seasonal fruit. And then in terms of your salads, you might use some of the darker seasonal greens like the kale instead of just lettuce. But people are used to enjoying salads year-round. Mm-hmm. Also, you can warm up your food a little bit. It certainly doesn't need to be ice cold. It can be room temperature. But things like sauces, like a tomato sauce for the zucchini pasta, that could be warmed. You know, you could just, or a soup, you could just heat it gently on the stove until it's a little above body temperature. And that way you're still preserving the nutrition, but you kind of have that warming, you know, feeling to the food.
Very good. Now, it says I read somewhere in your bio that you like to travel and taste other foods from other cultures and cuisines. So I'm not sure where you've been. Can you talk about some of the places that you've been and what you've eaten when you're there?
Are
there some interesting raw foods?
The first couple of places I traveled early on, I went to Costa Rica as an exchange student when I was in high school. And I learned how to make, this isn't raw, but I learned how to make really good beans and rice, you know, vegetarian dish, so that was great. And then I went to India after college and learned to make different Indian curries, you know, other vegetarian dishes. So I kind of had some interest in spicing and different vegetarian cooking techniques. In terms of the raw, I didn't really, you know, learn raw recipes when I was traveling, but what I would do is get ideas for recipes. So, for example, I went to Paris about 3 years ago, and that's where I got most of the ideas for my raw for dessert book. Just by, you know, looking around in bakery windows and, you know, trying a few things, I would figure out, well, how can I make this with unprocessed natural ingredients but still really imitate the taste of traditional dessert? So by trying different things that aren't raw and aren't always the healthiest thing, but just trying a little bit of it, I can kind of get ideas for how I can make a healthier version of some of those favorites.
Mm. Paris is definitely a good place to get ideas from. I lived in France for 4 years in the south of France, and I didn't eat a lot of the food because it certainly wasn't vegan, but I just love the presentation.
Yeah.
And you could go to the simplest of restaurants, the simplest of bistros, and everything was beautiful.
Yeah.
And once you have that point of view, I think it's easy to take it to whatever you're putting on the plate to make it look lovely.
Definitely.
So in your dessert book, there's like a theme here where your ingredients are basically centered around raw nuts and seeds, some fruits, some of them fresh, some of them dried, coconut, and then, of course, some sugar and salt, coconut oil, and cocoa powder.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Those seem to be the foundation of most of the desserts. And it's just amazing all the different things that you can make with those things. So as we talked about, the raw nuts and seeds can be part of a crust. Raw nuts and seeds can also be used to make creamy bases like sauces and creams and frostings. It's just amazing. This just a handful of ingredients can do so many things.
Well, you know, a lot of it is changing the texture or the seasoning. So, you know, whether you use a blender or a food processor or you cut up the fruits or how you plate it, like you might arrange a custardy filling and some fruit and your crust into a tart or a pie, but you also might arrange those same ingredients into a parfait, you know, for a summer fruit trifle. So a lot of the way we experience food is not just the ingredients, but it's the textures and the plating and how, and visually and how it's all put together. So that's another way you can get a lot of variety from a few ingredients.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, this is a small book, but it's loaded. I think there's a lot of good information on every page. And one thing that I particularly like in the beginning of the book is you have some very clear instructions on how to use different tools in the kitchen. And I read a lot of cookbooks, and I really give you an A+ on this one.
Well, thank you.
I would imagine it was maybe even a little tedious to put it together, but it's very clear. And so if anyone wants to improve their skills, you just have to read some of these instructions. They're very simple and easy to follow. And if you know a few different ways to cut and slice and dice and mince, it can make a big difference in the preparation, the look, even the texture of the food that you're making.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. You know, I, as a teacher, because I also teach raw food classes in addition to writing these books, I'm really interested in helping people learn things in a very simple way and helping to kind of demystify the whole art of cooking, you know, which for people who are not familiar with it can seem very mysterious and overwhelming, and to really break it down into clear steps and techniques and tips that people can really understand and learn.
Great. Okay, we're going to take a little break, and Jennifer, if you could stay with us, we'll be right back, and I want to talk a lot more about this delicious food.
Sure.
We'll be right back. Glass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And today we are talking about delicious, raw, yummy desserts and other great, fresh, raw foods that are healthy and delicious. And I'm here with Jennifer Kornbleet, who has a great new, I don't want to call it a cookbook, because it's all about not cooking, but a food preparation book, raw for dessert. What do you call it, Jennifer?
Well, you know, a lot of people call them recipe books, but I still call them cookbooks because I don't think that cooking needs to mean only heating foods. I think it can apply to other preparation techniques like blending or processing. So I like to still use that word, you know, just to expand an expanded definition of it. But you can certainly call it a recipe book.
Yeah, I like that. I think cooking, definitely our understanding of it has expanded to include food that doesn't necessarily have to be heated. I like that. Okay, so you've trained and you're a faculty member at the Living Light Culinary Arts Institute.
Uh-huh.
And can you tell me about what goes on there?
Absolutely, yeah. It's the Living Light Culinary Arts Institute is in Fort Bragg, California, a small town in Northern California, and it's a raw food chef school. So it focuses only on raw food preparation techniques, and we train chefs and teachers also. Sometimes people go there when just for personal reasons, they want to improve their skills and eat healthier and learn the skills, you know, as a home chef. But we have a lot of students who also are professional chefs or want to be in professional chefs and include raw food in what they're doing, and so they come to train with us. And then I'm in charge of the teacher training program, so I help train people who would like to go out and teach classes in culinary arts, in raw food culinary arts. So it's a great place. We have trainings all year round. Their website is rawfoodchef.com, and it's a wonderful school to go if you're interested in learning healthy food. As far as I know, it's one of the only raw food, full-time raw food chef schools out there.
Right. And have you seen a difference in the number of people that are interested in learning about raw foods and training as a chef? Are the numbers mm-hmm. increasing? Is the interest growing?
Absolutely, the interest is growing. And what I have found, too, because the classes there have always filled because it's a great school and there isn't a lot of opportunity to learn that, so we always have had full classes. But what I've noticed in recent years is that we have people coming from more walks of life and, you know, different countries, different parts of the country than you might expect, different ages. So the interest in healthy eating, I think, is really expanding across more groups of people now than it ever has.
And you said there are chefs that come that aren't exclusively raw, but they want to know how to prepare or include raw food in their menus?
Yeah, we'll have people come who are already working like in the food industry somehow and they just want to learn to include raw food dishes in their menus, or we have people who want to open an exclusively raw cafe. We've got all different kinds of students.
I find that really exciting that more mainstream chefs are interested in getting vegan and raw menu items mm-hmm. included. This is I think it's a really encouraging sign. Certainly, I would love the whole world to be this beautiful, pain-free, suffering-free, cruelty-free, non-exploitive place. But on the path to getting there, where it's great to have lots of vegan and raw restaurants around, having mainstream restaurants include these foods on their menus is really terrific. And one of the reasons why I think it's happening is because they realize that in most groups today, somebody is vegetarian, somebody mm-hmm. is vegan, somebody is raw, and people like to go out together. And mm-hmm. and if a restaurant really wants to satisfy their clients, they have to offer something for everyone.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just like everything in this society, changes are made based on if you can make a profit from something.
Mm-hmm.
And restaurants mm-hmm. are realizing there is some business involved, mm-hmm. business mm-hmm. there offering these foods. And so what I'm leading up to here, amongst other things, is when people feel powerless about their life, about the world, and some people that might be thinking about moving to a healthier diet but then think, you know, what's the point? You know, nobody else is doing it. The point is that change happens by individuals, and change happens by what we invest our dollars in. And so if you're going out and you're buying healthier foods, more healthy foods are going to be offered. It's really that simple.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Are there any particular people that have inspired you in your food preparation?
Well, you know, I get inspiration from all different chefs, from my students at the school. Sherry Soria is the director of the school at Living Light Institute, and she taught me. And the first time I actually trained there myself a little over 10 years ago with no intention of doing this professionally. I just wanted to learn for myself, you know, and so I went to the school. And that, it was really an inspiring experience because I learned there. Well, I already enjoyed writing and I enjoyed teaching. I was a high school English teacher at the time. And when I took the training program, I realized, well, hey, not only can I learn to make these delicious foods and gain the skills I need to develop my own recipes, but I can really learn to teach this and I can apply my teaching skills to share this information with people. So I was really inspired by her, by the teacher training program at the Living Light Institute, and that's what really made me make this career change and kind of step out and say, I'm going to teach, you know, I'm still going to be a teacher, but I'm going to teach people how to make healthy food.
Well, you're doing a great thing. And teaching is challenging. And what's going on in the school systems, I'm not really quite sure how we're going to come out of it because some of it isn't working and some of it isn't inspiring the kids. And it's so, so necessary. So to be able to find something you like to teach and to find an audience that wants to hear what you have to say is really a great thing. And Sherry Soria influenced me too because I was invited to speak at her Raw World conference in Costa Rica maybe, when was it, 2003 or 2004, something like that. And I was there for the week and ate the food, and when I came home, I said, well, I can do this. I think I'll be raw, and I did that for 2 years. So she's definitely very inspirational. It's helped a lot of people. What about organic food? Do you use a lot of organic food? Is that important to you?
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, I always tell people to do what you can because I don't want people to feel like if they can't afford or have access to organic that it's not worth even trying, you know. So do what you can. But I do try to get organic whenever I can at farmers markets or natural food stores, especially fresh produce ingredients like greens and berries and different kinds of fruit, to avoid the pesticides, also to support the small farmers. It's got increased nutritional content. It's better for the environment. It's, you know, better politically to be supporting small farmers who are making good choices for our health, I think. So, you know, I do whatever I can to support it, you know, but I just tell people just do the best you can.
Yeah, that's the best advice. Do the best you can. And once you start doing what you think the best you can is, sometimes you can always do a little more and it just gets better. Now, you're in Northern California, where the produce is pretty amazing.
Yes, and, you know, that wasn't always the case. Until last year, I lived in Chicago for 20 years. I've only been living here for a year. So it is wonderful to have access to all this great produce, but it's totally possible in, you know, it was possible in Chicago, too, to use seasonal ingredients to do a lot, too. You don't necessarily have to be in a place like California.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I know a lot of people, you've probably heard this when you say talking about eating organic or eating lots of fresh fruits and vegetables, people will complain and say it's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But there are ways around it where it doesn't have to be expensive. And when you're thinking about your food budget, some people forget where some of that money goes.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it goes to quote, foods that aren't really healthy, and if you don't eat those as much or don't choose them as much, there's a lot more money in your food budget for high-quality food that's going to keep you feeling good, give you lots of energy,
mm-hmm.
prevent
mm-hmm.
those diseases, give you a long life, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Are there, do you have any favorite restaurants, especially in the Bay Area there are a number of them.
Yeah, well, that's been great. I've really been impressed here with the number of restaurants that have vegetarian options, that have, use only organic ingredients, that where you can get brown rice instead of white rice, all these different choices. Where in Chicago, you're a lot more limited, but that has been nice here. I live in Oakland and in the East Bay and in San Francisco. There's just a lot of ethnic restaurants, Asian restaurants, other kinds of restaurants, Indian, where it's very easy to eat vegetarian and even gluten-free and organic, so that's great.
Do you ever work with children?
You know, I haven't. I think it's a wonderful thing to do and very necessary, but I've had some young people come to my classes sometimes, either with their parents or by themselves, and that's great to see, but I haven't worked directly with children.
Yeah, that's probably one of the biggest challenges, because you can control really young children, certainly an infant with breast milk, and then at 1 and 2 and 3 years old, you have a lot of opportunity to control what the child eats. And I know that when you feed a child healthy, nutritious food and don't incorporate the junk food into their diet at an early age, they usually don't develop a taste for it. But then there's kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all those little kids want to be like everybody else and have the same things. And most kids don't want to be different. And
there's
so many packaged, convenient, unhealthy, fast options that parents choose for their children. And I don't want to pass judgment, but I don't know how some of these parents choose these things, because they're certainly not good for their children.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then the children that are being fed healthy foods, they're curious. And the most popular of all is that white flour component.
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
white flour that's in bagels and breads and pretzels and cookies. And you haven't worked with children, but do you... I don't know. I guess adults are just older children.
Like, so. Yeah. I mean, I think education is so important. And one thing, I did teach high school English, so I was teaching teenagers at that point. And I would bring my lunch to class, and it was always something really healthy and vegetarian. And most of these kids lived on fast food. But they would look at my lunch with curiosity, and they would be like, what's that? You know, and they'd actually want to try it. So I think kids are also naturally curious.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that you can use that to get kids engaged in something like cooking healthy foods, you know.
And so you're primarily working, training other people that want to become chefs. Do you do any other types of training?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. At the Living Light Institute, that's what I focus on, is teaching teachers. But other than that, what I focus on is teaching complete beginners. So through my books, I'm going to be teaching some classes in the East Bay. I taught a lot of classes in Chicago, and now that I've moved to California, I'm going to start teaching a lot of classes in the East Bay. Those are all available on my website. So I'm looking forward to teaching classes for beginners, as well as my work at the Living Light Institute.
So I'm curious, is there a stereotype of the people that come that want to know how to prepare raw food, or is it a very diverse community?
It's really a pretty diverse community. I mean, I would say that I focus more on audiences that are beginners and that want to add raw foods to their diet. There's definitely a group of people out there that are very strict, you know, 100% raw. Is it raw? Is it not raw? You know, really, really kind of, I think, hung up on that. And that's not really the group of people I'm trying to reach. I don't want to be some exclusive thing. I also don't think that, getting off on a little tangent here, but I just think it's important to say that the health of food is only defined by is it raw or is it not, because mm-hmm. you can have something that's not raw, like steamed broccoli that is very, very healthy, or something that is raw, like even my chocolate mousse, which you don't want to eat all the time, you know. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's not bad, but you don't want to, like, live on that. So I think there's a spectrum of what healthy foods are. I think it's good to include more raw in the diet, but I think the most important thing is including healthy, natural, whole, plant-based foods. And so I try to reach a more mainstream kind of audience that's curious and wants to know some simple, easy, tasty ways to improve their health, rather than focusing on that it needs to be some kind of all-or-nothing extreme thing.
That's really a good point. You know, I was talking briefly before about these raw snack foods that I've seen in the stores, and some of them aren't particularly healthy. And there are things that are considered raw, like a cold-pressed olive oil or the nama shoyu, which is a raw version of soy sauce. And yet you don't want to eat a lot of those foods. One is too salty, and one really has too much refined fat, even though it's raw.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you have any concerns or comments? You know, we had that problem with almonds a few years back, and now it's still impossible to get an officially raw almond in this country because we heat flash them. Mm-hmm. And it's really an unfortunate thing. It's the way our government kind of deals with things without really solving the problem. But I know that I get raw almonds from Spain right now.
Uh-huh.
And it's
Yeah, you can get them from directly from the farmer at farmers markets, from Spain, whatever. I think this law is in the process of, you know, maybe being reversed.
Yeah, I heard that they were considering looking at, they accepted it to be looked at or something like that, the courts did.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it's a crazy thing. There are so many things. Again, people don't know what's going on with our food, and that's what I wanted to get at. So we have something as simple as an almond. It grows on a tree. It comes in a shell. And, you know, why can't we just get it like that? But because something contaminated got into a supply of them, now the way the government manages it is we're going to heat treat all of them.
Yeah.
And this happens with lots of things, for like grains, for example. I remember when I was doing this all raw thing, and I really wanted to do the all be all raw. I just thought it was challenging. I thought it was fun, and I was buying oatmeal. I thought it was raw, and then I learned no. It's again, it's like heat treated, because a lot of the grains will go rancid if they're really raw. And they have to be treated. And there are just so many invisible steps in our with our food that we're so unaware of.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that's why it's really best to try and support these local farmers, these community-supported agriculture co-ops, where you know you're getting... You know where you're getting the food and where it's coming from, and how simple and fresh it is, and how little has been done to it before it gets to your plate. Now, probably in California, there's a lot of opportunities to get a lot of fresh food. There's, I love the San Francisco, the name of the building is escaping me right now. That huge place where the huge farmer's market is. Oh, hello. Okay. Well, there's lots of opportunities for great fresh food there. And what else did I want to talk about? Do you have another book planned? Now this one is out.
Yeah, I'm working on a revised, expanded edition of my first book, Raw Food Made Easy for One or Two People. The first edition came out 5 years ago, and it's still really popular, but a lot has changed in the last 5 years, and I want to update it. And a couple chapters I'm going to be adding, in addition to just adding more recipes in every category, is I'm going to be adding a green smoothie chapter, which, because green smoothies have gotten really popular. They're basically a blended smoothie with some fruit but also some dark leafy greens, and they're a great way to get more greens in your diet without really tasting it. It tastes like a fruit smoothie, and it's easy to digest, and they're quick and easy. So I'm going to have a chapter of many green smoothie recipes that are really quick and simple breakfast recipes loaded with greens. I'm also going to have a chapter in travel and how to stay healthy when you're on the go and when you're traveling, and some really simple portable foods. And then there'll just be more recipes in every category. So that's coming up next. That'll be out in about a year.
That sounds great. I am a huge fan of greens. I have a green juice every day. Mm-hmm. I saw on your website you have a recipe for a green juice. And I can't say enough about the leafy green vegetables. I'm glad to hear that the green smoothie or the blended salad, whatever you might choose to call it, is becoming more popular. I know more and more health activists are recommending them. And, again, so easy, so simple, so good.
Mm-hmm.
And the there's so many benefits. So the dark leafy green vegetable, which is loaded with immune system boosting nutrients, can be a little difficult to digest. So one way is to lightly steam them. and in some ways some of the nutrients become more absorbable. Another way is to juice them, but then you're not getting the fiber, and there are different reasons why you might want to have the fiber or not want to have the fiber. But when you blend them, you're also breaking them down a little bit, making them more digestible.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really a great way to get your greens in a blended salad. And I think it's a good way for kids, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Cram those greens into some sweet, pleasant-tasting, yummy smoothie. The thing is, though, the greens do make the smoothie an interesting color, and probably the best thing you could do is make it look chocolatey.
Yes, or it depends what ingredients you use. You could make a blueberry smoothie with frozen blueberries and a banana and some orange, and then add some kale or chard or spinach, and it'll be purple. You won't really see it. So if you use something purple in there, or you know, some chocolate in there, you're not going to see the green.
Right, because I don't know why, but people do have an aversion to a lot of green-looking foods.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, that's great. I'm glad to hear you're doing that. Now, there's a lot of people. Do you work ever with athletes?
You know, I haven't specifically. Like I said, kind of my goal is just to reach your average, you know, mainstream people. But there are many, many athletes who are turning to vegan and raw nutrition now. I mean, more than ever now. And there's some, you know, world-famous ones, too. And I've had a lot of students at the school who are athletes, and they have found that this is a great diet for them because digestion is so much easier, so they're not wasting a lot of energy digesting heavy foods, and they have that energy available, you know, for their working out.
Right. I've read a lot of the Brendan Brazier books. He's put out his Thrive books and revised them, mm-hmm. and just makes them better and better. And he's a phenomenal athlete and eats a lot of raw food. And I just mention it because I would think this smoothie thing would be something that would be really appealing to athletes, not just because it's quick and easy. But a lot of athletes tend to go with these protein powders,
mm-hmm.
and put them in a smoothie of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them really are not healthy, these protein powders. And the idea is, it's an idea that really isn't right, that we need to have tremendous levels of protein to be really muscular and healthy,
mm-hmm.
and strong. And another thing that people don't realize about these magical dark leafy green vegetables is, what are they? What are, when we talk about macronutrients, protein, carbohydrates, and fat, what are dark leafy green vegetables made of? And people are really surprised to find out what they are, which is mostly protein.
Yeah.
And And then I like to tell those that want to be great athletes and build up their muscles, I remind them about all those great big muscly animals out there, gorillas and elephants and rhinoceros and hippopotamus, and what are they all eating?
Right.
They don't greens, have blenders to make smoothies, they're eating green. They're eating a lot of green. And it's a high-quality protein loaded with antioxidants and immune system-boosting nutrients. Blend that up with a little fruit and a little fat, and it's really phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I have my personal favorite, and that's, I call it piña colada kale,
mm-hmm.
with coconut milk or coconut, pineapple, and kale.
It sounds great.
It's so good. And the pineapple has such a strong flavor that it really overpowers the whole thing, and you could cram a lot of kale in there and never know it. It's really good. Do you have a favorite smoothie?
You know, there are so many I like. If I want to be really quick and easy, I might just combine one fruit with one green. So, for example, you know, pineapple kale or mango with collard greens or something like that, pear with parsley. If I want a little more of a complex flavor, if I want to do something that isn't as sweet, I might put the same ingredients I put in a green juice in the blender. So a little apple, kale, cucumber, celery, parsley, lemon, and ginger, blend that up. And it's kind of like a green juice, but thicker and more blended. If I want something sweeter, I'll make a creamy berry smoothie with
frozen berries and a little bit of nut milk and maybe a little juice if I need to sweeten it a little bit, a banana, and different kinds of greens, kale, chard, maybe a little bit of ground flax seeds in there. So it's just really limitless what you can do with the green smoothies.
It is. And another thing that people aren't aware of is that those green leafy vegetables are fat-soluble, the nutrients in them. And so it's okay to have a little fat in those smoothies because it helps digest some of those nutrients. You know, nature knew what it was doing, and protein's important, carbohydrates important, fat's important. We just want to get them from whole, fresh, plant-based sources, and we need them all. Fat's gotten a bad rap over the years. Carbohydrates have gotten a bad rap over the years. Protein seems to be like the king, and I think it should be getting a bad rap because too much protein seems to be causing lots of issues. Whole-based plant, fresh fruits, vegetables, whole grains. Do you do any sprouting?
You know, I don't personally, just because of the time issue, I'm trying to keep things really easy. I think it's a great thing to do. I just buy, you know, sprouts if I want to have them, alfalfa sprouts or sunflower sprouts at the store or at the farmer's market. But if you want to save money and have some fresh greens, particularly in the winter, I do have the technique on how to do it in my book, Raw Food Made Easy. It's a great way to have some fresh greens in the winter for very little money.
It is. Because, I was going to mention beans, and I'm a big fan of beans, but there's ways to have beans if you want to have them raw, and they're so inexpensive, and I find that the beans sprout a lot easier than the seeds do for me.
Yeah. Well, bean sprouts, all you need is just a little tail on them. It just takes a day or two. It's not like an alfalfa sprout, which can take several days, and it's very simple to sprout legumes.
Right. Okay. Well, I think we have had a very, very yummy hour. I am looking forward to making a number of these different desserts in your book. They're beautiful and nutritious and delicious. I recommend people checking out Raw for Dessert, going to your website, which is learnrawfood.com. Watch those videos, and you also have a DVD with those videos in it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it has a lot more in it, I imagine. Great. Very useful, very terrific, delicious, healthy, good for the planet, good for you. Thanks, Jennifer. Thanks for all you do.
Thanks
for talking with us today. You've been listening to It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass. Thanks for listening.